What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the State of the Nova Nation podcast presented by VU Hoops. I'm Emma Houghton, he's Pat Zhang, and Pat, we have a little bit to talk about today.
Just a bit.
Some stuff went on since the last time you listened to us last Tuesday. We'll recap the Big East tournament, the disappointing loss in the quarterfinals to Creighton for Villanova. The NIT, that yes, you heard that right. NIT preview for tonight as you're listening to this episode against the Liberty Flames. And then we're going to end on some positivity. The Villanova women's basketball team is what you should be turning your sights to. As we flip the calendar to March, they've got a really, really exciting postseason ahead of them. But Pat, let's take the temperature here. It's obviously been a week. How are we feeling over this last week?
Villanova is dancing in March, though they are dancing in the dark, as we'll call it with the NIT. So still going, just not sure how many people are going to see it with it. It was a fun week in New York. I know we both got to see each other at the Garden, along with Eugene, Tommy, Perry, like VU Hoop Squad in the house. Which is really awesome. But obviously things didn't turn out the way we wanted it to on that Thursday night.
Yeah. So we're not going to go too far in depth on these games because they did happen so long ago, and we're looking towards the future and the games coming up at this point. We will talk about some themes from Nova's games. Specifically, we're going to talk about the Big East tournament. Pat with the correct call. That's got to feel pretty good. As soon as you said it, I thought, we're all so stupid for not picking Marquette, the number one team in the conference for a reason. The number two seed in the tournament, they are becoming a very sexy Final Four team.
They are.
Everybody I've talked to has Marquette coming out of that region.
Yes.
So that had to feel pretty good for you.
Well, listen, I picked the correct matchup. I did not pick the correct winner. I thought Xavier would be able to ride it. What I did not expect was that they just weren't able to make anything in that first half, and Marquette just built up too much of a lead and rode it all the way there for their first ever Big East tournament title. But yeah, it did feel good to pick them into that Big East title game. Like you said, I just thought a lot of people discounted Marquette and were counting them out and going with the UConns of the world and Creightons and Xaviers when they were always right there staring you in the face how good that Marquette Golden Eagle squad was. So hats off to them for winning that Big East tournament title.
Yeah, and they sweep the Coach of the Year and Player of the Year regular season awards. Mm-hmm. And Matt St. Jean had an awesome stat about how few players have won the Conference Player of the Year award and the tournament most outstanding player. Colin Gillespie last year, Tyler Kulig this year. He's going to get some serious national recognition if he's able to keep it up in the tournament.
But
it's funny because so I went to the game on Wednesday. I had all three games in that session ticket. Late slate on Thursday, and then was going to play it up by air on Friday, didn't end up going. I was commuting for the two best games of the tournament. Seton Hall DePaul game, obviously, and then the Marquette St. John's overtime. All the games that I made sure I was watching ended up being blowouts. This was a tournament that surprised me because generally the really good teams ran away with it or got completely left in the dust. And it was the lower seeds that were making things interesting, at least early on.
It felt like we got about one good game per session.
Yeah.
You know, Wednesday, the Seton Hall DePaul game was incredible. It was such a fun way to start things off on day one with that middle game. You go to Thursday, and of course, St. John's and Marquette was awesome with Marquette erasing the big deficit, going to overtime and winning. I do give credit, though, to the UConn Providence game. It looked like it was going to be a terrible game, and PC pulled it back before falling. And then in that night session, we'll forget about the late game there for a second, say the DePaul X one was a ton of fun, and of course leading into that semifinal game on Friday with Marquette and UConn. And I was there on Friday night, and it was a very it was a huge atmosphere for Friday night at the Garden, as it always is. It was a blast, and that game, that was some of the highest level basketball I've seen in person in a little bit. So like you said, it was a mix, but there were so many great games and great moments from it. I think the Big East tournament always lives up to the billing.
Always such a fun week. And we talked about it with Matt St. Jean on our preview episode. We all would have been shocked to see 1, 2, 3, 4 on that final Friday night. And that's exactly what happened. So
what we got?
The Big East tournament will surprise you. As Pat mentioned, we're going to go deeper into the NCAA tournament bracket on Thursday. Tonight we're going to focus more on Villanova and the NIT. But with that being said, let's switch to some takeaways from the Georgetown win and the Creighton loss specifically. Offense looked decent in both games, especially good against Georgetown. Obviously, it was that 80-48 victory, probably the best offensive performance we've seen all year from Villanova, second in point total, obviously, behind that LaSalle game, I believe. 74 points against Creighton. I think if you look at that alone, you feel pretty good, but it was the defense that just completely crumbled and let the team down, and that prevented them from getting any further.
Certainly. Yeah, I don't have too much for Georgetown. They took care of business and they beat a team that very much looked like they weren't interested in being there and were ready for some changes. And of course, it ended up being Patrick Ewing's final game. It also looked like a team, as I said, that was a little uninterested. You think of their star player, Primo Spears, who is now in the transfer portal. If you'll notice, it came on social media that he had scheduled his birthday party for Friday during the Big East tournament semifinal. So Primo was definitely
serious questions about that.
Confident that Georgetown was making it to Friday night. And in hindsight, he was absolutely correct. And is now no longer a Hoya. So I think that goes into the level and quality of opponent that Nova took down on Thursday. And then as you said on Thursday, as you said, you know, they put up 74 points against Creighton. And I looked into it because the 74 really did stand out to me. 74 points would have won the game for Villanova in 13 of their last 15 games that they've played, which I think shows you the strides that they had made defensively leading up to that, and then how it just all fell off the rails on Thursday against the Blue Jays. The outliers, those two games where they would have dropped it, of course, the Big East Tournament quarterfinal, as well as one of the games against Providence, where Providence really lit them up and scored in the mid-80s there. So you would have felt good about 74, but things defensively were just an absolute mess. It was a flashback to December and January Villanova defense for sure.
Yeah, the way that Villanova had been playing, the way their defense had been looking, was the reason why a lot of people thought Nova was a sneaky pick to make the championship at the very least, if not the NCAA tournament. And you're right, flashback is the perfect way to put it. 55 second half points to Creighton. I wanted to fact check this with you because I believe you're the expert. Most of the season in the second half?
It's right around there. They've given up 50 before. I believe they gave up over 50 to Xavier, but I have 53.
Yeah, I think it was 51 in that Xavier game. Yeah,
51. They've done it at least once. They might have done it twice. 55 might be it, actually, because that is, of course, you say it out loud, such a ridiculous number to give up in a half.
Yeah.
But Villanova scored 51 in that half.
That's what I mean. It was such a juxtaposition. You're certainly not giving props to Creighton's defense.
No.
They didn't look very good either, but every Creighton starter had 12-plus points. Baylor Shireman had those key three-pointers in the first half. This game was a lot about momentum. It was a game of runs. Kalkbrenner got whatever he wanted down low. All of the guards on Creighton looked good. Everybody was able to hit threes. And I remember a key that we talked about before the second time Nova played Creighton this season, when Nova was able to win at home, you have to keep Creighton under a certain number. And I think that number is 70. You go down to the end stretch here where Villanova was able to win four of their last five against those really good teams. They kept all of those opponents under 72 points. And Seton Hall was the highest at 72. So it was disappointing to see the defense perform that way in the last regular or you're going to say regular season, technically it's postseason play, but that last game of the year when it had completely switched things around, and that's why people were so hopeful about this team.
It was a really tough way to go out because I there's nothing to even focus in on defense because they were terrible on the interior and god awful on the perimeter. So it's not just looking at one of those areas and say, try to tighten up. They were torn apart by Kalkbrenner. They really struggled that while what they did great at Wells Fargo Center against Creighton was being able to front Kalkbrenner and make it very difficult for those entry passes into him in the low post and cutting off the supply to him for lobs around the rim. None of that repeated itself at the Garden, where Kalkbrenner repeatedly was able to take advantage of matchups on smaller guards for Nova when they were switching for all five positions, and those guards were not able to get in front of him, allowing for him to be in really good position to back him down. Then we moved to the three-point defense, if you want to call it defense. They allowed 48% from three. The 12 threes that Creighton made on Thursday matched their total they made in their other two games against Villanova in the regular season, just to show how much of a letdown it was for the Cats defensively there. And what was the most discouraging about it was the sheer amount of open threes that it was allowed. It wasn't Creighton hitting a lot of really difficult shots where, hey, it was just their night. They're drilling everything over really well-guarded plays. There were so many breakdowns and so many missed assignments for a game of that magnitude and a team playing for its life. Quite disappointing for me.
Yeah, it was just a total meltdown from the start. Villanova was just outplayed, and I don't think you can say that effort-wise, desire-wise, throughout the course of the season. And I think we all underestimated Greg McDermott's ability to rebound in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, truly came out and showed that he was the superior coach with the superior team on Thursday night. They obviously got torched by Eric Dixon, specifically 6 for 8 from three with 31 points in that last timeout. I think it was fun to talk about how Dixon would be able to torch Kalkbrenner again, but that was never going to happen. I always thought that this would be a game that came down to Villanova's guards and how that mid-range jump shot would look. And again, 74 points, they shot 42% from the field. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But what nobody was talking about was the defense coming along with it, because honestly, we assumed it would, because Villanova's defense had been playing so well lately. So disappointing, discouraging, a letdown, a meltdown. Those are all the words that I used on Thursday night as well. I actually, crazy too, I was at the Big East championship game last year when Villanova beat Creighton. Very different type of game, obviously.
Yes.
I thought there were more Creighton fans on the Thursday quarterfinal game at 9:30 p.m. than there were at the Big East championship game last year. I had to move my seat because I was so surrounded by Creighton fans that I couldn't even take it. It was unbelievable how well the Blue Jays traveled and they showed out for their team.
They do travel pretty well for a Midwest team. I give Creighton fans a lot of credit for that. I saw a lot of X as well.
Yeah, everybody traveled well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was cool. Very unfortunate to see UConn fans, as always. But all the other Midwestern schools, they really did travel well. I mean, you saw it on Saturday for the Big East title game as well. There was, of course, the Xavier contingent, but Marquette filled that building on Saturday evening, which was pretty cool for them, of course, being in New York and at the Garden. So always very impressed with this conference and the incredible loyalty that all of these fan bases show to their programs.
Okay, yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about keys for Villanova down the stretch of this season, hopefully more than one game past Liberty on Tuesday night. But before we go there, there were some non-game action news from the Big East. Pat mentioned earlier that Patrick Ewing is no longer the coach of at Georgetown. Villanova forced him out. Last game of his coaching career, more likely than not. And then potentially more surprising, but a lot of people saw it coming, Mike Anderson is out at St. John's after giving Marquette a true run for their money. Thoughts there, Pat, especially with a lot of rumors circulating about who might fill those spots.
About both jobs, which is going to be very
familiar names.
Very much so. For Georgetown, I don't think there's too many thoughts to be shared on what happened. It just very simply had to be done. And it was still posed as well as Georgetown let him go. So this wasn't Patrick Ewing resigning, which is what we had said for basically over the last year, was that we did not think he would do it. You know, there was potential to have a mutual step away that didn't happen. Georgetown had to force him out, which I think is unfortunate for the way that we look at this, but it had to be done for the sanity of that program. St. John's, while Mike Anderson has still never had a losing season and the Johnnies can be plucky and they almost beat Marquette, I also think that was the right call to move on from Anderson, because it never felt like the St. John's teams were always just a hodgepodge every year under him, where there were all these different pieces. I don't think they fit into their puzzle very well together. They could lead to some fun games and some fun outbreaks, but the consistency was never there. And for St. John's, a team that does have a proud history, you know, you want to see them try and, or you understand wanting to see them establish a little bit more of a set culture, a set identity, and a set philosophy. And things just felt all over the place there, and they underperformed, not making the NCAA tournament again. So I agree with both of those calls before we get into any of the potential feelings for that. But what about you?
Yeah, I think the word that's going to define Anderson's tenure is inconsistency. Like they started off undefeated in non-conference play a couple of years ago. They had a double-digit lead against Villanova last year. They had a double-digit lead against Marquette this year. They lost both those games. They have to get this person right. Mullen was a nightmare, obviously. I don't think anybody's going to say that Anderson was a nightmare because of that incredible winning streak that he still has going. But what puts it into such stark contrast for me is how Xavier has turned around as a program under Sean Miller, how Marquette has turned around as a program under Shaka Smart in 2 years. Travis Steele was not a bad coach. I keep saying Villanova as the team here. Xavier won the NIT last year. That was not a bad team. But you just, the program, the university knew that just something was missing. And I think for St. John's, that's especially evident. Georgetown needs a complete rebuild. I think we've been thinking this for 2-3 years now. St. John's is a little bit more of an interesting situation because the talent is there. The talent has been there in the past. Mm-hmm. They just need a new leader to really put it together. And they're hoping to emulate some of the success that teams like Marquette and Xavier have had.
So we'll do it quickly then. Is Rick Pitino the next coach of St. John's?
I think it's too easy not to do. I really hope he is. I think that would be awesome for the conference.
I think he is too. I think a lot of people have started to really bury the baggage that does come with a Rick Pitino. But when you get to a program that's as desperate as St. John's is to win and win again and really establish it, I think it makes it easier to overlook some of the things that happened towards the end of his Louisville tenure and remember why he lost that in the first place. It does feel like the stars are aligning for him to go to the Johnnies and be back in the Big East.
Dana O'Neill's going to have to come out with a new installment of her Big East book.
Oh, it's going to be so good.
This will change everything. And I'll pose this to you because I don't think I can answer it. Will Ed Cooley be the next coach at Georgetown?
You know, I really haven't believed that it's going to happen. And then I saw the interview from yesterday that he did with press after Providence was drawn against Kentucky. And he very much had the opportunity to say, I'm not interested. I'm not going there. And he did not answer the question. As you heard, he said, I am focused on Kentucky. Of course, our staff is going to be put in these sort of positions when we've been winning the way that Providence has over the last couple of years. I can't say as a Providence fan that would instill a lot of confidence that Ed is not thinking about picking up and moving. And whether it be Georgetown, Texas, Texas A&M, you know, there are jobs opening up out there. And if I was a member of Friartown, it would not be well right now.
Yeah, I don't think all is well anyway. But I don't know. I didn't have the same sort of reaction as you about that press conference. I didn't expect him to go out there and to say specifically, I am not leaving Providence, because then you're setting yourself up for some issues in the future. If that decision,
you lose your leverage. Absolutely. Change.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. The leverage of it. I think he just was to the point of being annoying, actually trying to divert the question and just focus on Kentucky. I think it's more imaginable to see him moving to a team like Texas or Texas A&M than Georgetown, to be honest with you. I think it would require a new change of scene like that. I know that his daughter goes to Georgetown. Mm-hmm. I know that staying in the Big East would be nice. You have all those ancillary factors, but they would have to offer him a ludicrous type of deal for him to move from Providence. I truly do believe that. So I think personally, Ed Cooley will still be the Providence coach next year.
I think the money's going to be crazy from Georgetown. The question is going to be if Ed wants to do it. I do think they will be able to match whatever number it is. It's going to come down to, do I lose a lot of the goodwill I have built up with this program over, what, the last 13 years that Ed has been there and built them into such a strong program and make the jump over to Georgetown and try this thing over again. So with that, I lean no. However, when I would have told you no shot a month ago, I I do believe that door is open.
Yeah, no, you're right. It has definitely opened a little bit. Maybe just because of people forcing it open with their arms and legs and feet.
Well, it also helps when Georgetown backs a Brink truck through that door. That will also help open the door, and I think that's what they're doing.
And that is very much true. So, yeah, we're going to go more in-depth, especially on the Big East teams, on Thursday in our episode. UConn against Iona. Obviously, I know you have some Pats on some thoughts on UConn.
I cannot wait for that game.
Their exit was something. My pick in the Big East tournament definitely got too trendy because they crashed and burned down the stretch.
Yeah, I'll hit it very quickly, but I'm just was utterly thrilled, and I have no. I know I usually try and be an analyst on this, and you know, give you a fair breakdown. I was to the moon thrilled to watch Marquette beat them at Madison Square Garden, their second home, as you may have heard from Dan Hurley there. And not only that, it is their third straight semifinal defeat in the Big East tournament. They haven't even gotten back to Saturday since they have returned to the Big East Conference, though. You wouldn't believe that probably if you listened to the billion UConn fans that were outside Madison Square Garden.
You wouldn't believe that if you listened to Dan Hurley.
Also,
and that's why I have that problem with him. There's a difference between confidence and cockiness. And he has crossed so far over that line that you can't even see it anymore. It's a dot to you. That's a line from Friends. I hope people got that. But that's what I find so unlikable about this UConn program is that they just have such an issue staying where they are and letting their play prove themselves. They always got to put words to it, and they usually end up disappointed. And it happened again this year.
If we were discussing this at American Whiskey right now, I would have so many stronger things to say about them, but I'm going to take the diplomatic approach here and just eat them for now.
Yeah. It was fun. Obviously an awesome week. I have always heard the argument about conference week versus the first week of March Madness. I know that conference week, a lot of people love going to and then watching pleasure for the other side, but watching the Big East tournament is unlike pretty much anything else. So I think it went just about as well as we could have wanted from a viewing perspective. Obviously, we wish Villanova could have gone further, but the season is not over yet. And I think here's where we will transition to our Liberty preview. I think the best way to set it all up, and I'll let you, Pat, go into the NIT nitty gritty, because I was pretty unfamiliar with the NIT, mm-hmm. I will be totally honest. But I looked at Villanova's record home, away, in conference, quad one, quad two, quad three, and I juxtaposed it to Liberty. So I'll go through the list here. Villanova finished seventh.
The same thing. I love it.
I think this is the best way to do it because it's the top 68 teams in the NCAA tournament. That's relatively obvious. You've got some at-large bids, but still. Once you get to the NIT, all bets are off. You have teams declining bids, so it gets a little bit different. But Villanova finished 17-16. They did finish over 500 in Kyle Neptune's first season as head coach. 10-10 in conference play, 10-4 at home, 5-8 on the road, which really hurt them. Quad one wins. I think everyone is sick of hearing this stat. They were 2-11
on the
season.
That's why they're not in the tournament.
They went 2-11. Exactly. 3-3 quad two, 6-2 quad three. The Liberty Flames in the A-Sun Conference, they lost a one-point thriller to Kennesaw State, which has an awesome story, a really fun team to root for in the tournament if you're looking for a fun underdog there. They finished 23-8 on the season, 15-3 in conference for Liberty, 15-1 at home. They were dominant, 6-6 on the road, just 500 there. Probably the reason why they weren't in the tournament as well, without that at-large bid. 0-3 in quad one, 1-2 in quad two, 6-3 in quad three. So the biggest difference there, Villanova had way more chances for quad one wins. They weren't able to get them. Liberty, being in the A-Sun tournament, just didn't have as many options, but they were undefeated in quad one opportunities.
They were defeated in quad one opportunities.
Yeah.
0-3. Yeah. Exactly. And for Liberty too, you know, you'd look at that 26-8 record, it was really inflated by beating a lot of poorer teams. The ones that you didn't mention there is that they went 16-0 in quad four and 3-0 against non-division one schools. So 19 of their 26 wins were against quad four or lower. Now let's look at Liberty here and look at some fun facts for them first. Fun fact number one, their women's field hockey team actually plays in the Big East. Even though
that's cool.
Even though basketball is in the A-Sun here, Seth Curry started his college life at Liberty before he transferred to Duke. And then most recent NCAA trips for them, they were there in 2019, where they upset Mississippi State before losing to Virginia Tech. And in 2021, they also made the tournament where they lost to Oklahoma State. Their coach is Richie McKay, who's been there for 10 seasons over two stints. And this is the highest rated team, as according to KenPom, he has ever had.
Cool. Love that. You always got these fun little stats. I remember for Delaware State, you had similar ones too. That's pretty cool.
You know, when we go against opponents that Villanova does not see very often, I always think it's fun to do a little digging on them and just see what we can turn out.
Yeah. So I did something that didn't require much digging, but the number one guy to look out for as you're watching this game on Tuesday night, Darius McGee, the fifth ranked scorer in the country with 22.5 points per game. He shoots 40% from three, 88% from the free throw line. He was the ASUN player of the year by far. This is an interesting matchup for Villanova. We did mention, or we haven't mentioned, that Liberty is the 2 seed in the NIT, which means Villanova is unranked in the NIT. So a very tough draw against one of the better teams in the tournament, but they have relatively similar styles. They take a ton of threes. So if you thought threes. Villanova was bad, Liberty is above them, people, in three-point attempts per field goal attempts. They're third in the country, Villanova's fifth. So that will be pretty absurd. They take a ton of threes and less twos than most teams in the country, but they are a high two-point percentage team. So they'll play at a super slow tempo. They are led by a star. It's not unlike a lot of Villanova teams in the past, shoot them up, sleep in the streets. That's kind of the mantra that Liberty has been living by this year.
Yeah, certainly. You nailed it on that stylistically. They play very similar. On offense, the disparity is that Liberty shoots 37% from three, while Villanova's at 34. And 34 is even an improvement now for Nova, who shot very well from beyond the arc against Georgetown and Creighton. And as of late, has at least seen that three-point number start to creep up, because there was a time where it was in the very low 30s and almost in the high 20s. So good to see that start moving, but that's where Liberty does most of their damage. I think McGee is just a player that we need to look at, and I've got some fun numbers on him. So he, as you mentioned, he did lead the ASUN in scoring at 22.5 points per game. That's 5 points per game more than second place. That's a huge difference from first to second. He has a season high this year of 43 points in a single game. He is Liberty's all-time leading scorer. He's only 5'9" when you go out there too, so don't think NBA specimen Cam Whitmore. He is able to really score through a litany of dribble moves. I watched a ton of highlights over the last 24 hours as I tried to catch up on Liberty here. You're going to see him do basically everything to try and create space around that three-point line. And then this is my favorite thing I was able to dig up on him. He takes 39% of Liberty's shot attempts. The man took almost 600 field goals this season. If you combine the field goal attempts for Brandon Slater and Eric Dixon, you have two less than McGee took all year.
That's good for one of the leading scorers on Villanova.
If you combine them, they took 577 field goal attempts. Darius McGee took 579 field goal attempts.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He's putting the ball up on Tuesday night. I can guarantee you that.
Balance is definitely not a word used to describe Liberty. Or
do they care?
For sure. No, they don't care at all. When you have a baller like that, why not? They have two players that average double-digit scoring totals.
Yeah,
Darius McGee and exactly. So Nova has four and Slater's fifth with 9.5 points per game. So Villanova is definitely the leader in that category. They're also very undersized, which is something that Villanova's been struggling with all season long. So there are a lot of eerily similar components here. Some of the aspects that I wanted to mention that I will be looking out for, especially after the Georgetown and Creighton performances, 35 three-point attempts against Georgetown, 30 against Creighton. They shot 43% from three from both games, which, as you mentioned, is way above season average. But Liberty is going to be doing the same thing on their offensive end. So what Villanova should be focusing on this game is three-point defense, which is what their downfall was against Creighton. Was really good against Georgetown, is why they limited them to, I believe it was 48 points. 3 for 20 from three was Georgetown's line, 15%. Totally different story on Thursday night. Creighton shot 12 for 25 with 48%. So we know that Liberty is going to try and shoot the lights out in the game, in this game, because that's the only way that they can win. They're just not able to match up defensively. They're not able to match up physicality-wise. They're not able to match up experience-wise against Villanova. They're just going to have to outshoot them. And Villanova hasn't done a ton to prove that they can keep up with a team like this. So they're going to have to bring the three-point defensive intensity to try and stop these guys from shooting.
Yeah, I'm nervous with this draw for it. You know, you mentioned a team that is lethal from beyond the arc and has a guy that can go crazy from deep in McGee. I also look at them for, we know Villanova has issues with communication and staying on assignments on defense. Well, what does Liberty do really well? They move the ball really well. They assist on almost 60% of their field goal attempts. Looking for that direct context, Villanova only assists on 47% of their made field goals. They move the ball a heck of a lot here. We also went into, you know, the fact that, or something we haven't really touched on, is that this is the NIT and these are not neutral site games. Villanova has to travel to Liberty to play this game. What has Liberty done this year? As you mentioned, gone 15-1 at home there in Lynchburg, Virginia. This is a very difficult draw for Villanova. I believe they're going to be underdogs when the line does come out on Tuesday morning. They have to, defense is going to be the way they win this game. They have to muddy things up here, make things very difficult for Liberty, and then try and ride things out with some of the guys that are going to be out there for Nova on O. But as I said, this is, I'm very excited that Villanova did take this bid. This is the correct thing to do to add more experience here, but they were given no favors.
No, absolutely not. And it's funny that they're going up against a team that in a perfect world would be them. Yeah. If everything went right this year, a lot of the keys, or I was just going to mention too, that home court advantage is not insignificant in this tournament, and it's why there are so many fewer upsets because of the home court piece that you just don't see in the NCAA tournament. So I had some keys that involved getting the ball to Dixon down low. Liberty is not a great rebounding team, so I think Villanova can try and take advantage of that. But I don't think we can fully get into keys to this game without mentioning who might not be playing. Mm-hmm. And that involves Cam Whitmore and Justin Moore. So we're going back to December basketball, Pat. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, late November, early December before Cam, because I believe Cam was December 7th, if I have the date right. And then Justin Moore came back at the end of January for that Providence game. So yeah, also known as a time that a rather dark time of this season as I flash back to Thanksgiving weekend and that trip out west.
Yeah, definitely the lowest part of the season. It's an interesting debate here, whether you can be angry at them for that. We're obviously not going to cast any judgment, but I think the fact that it's two of Villanova star players that have futures past Villanova more likely than not after this season, that's not a coincidence. I, like you, believe that this was the right thing to do. A team like UNC declined this NIT bid. I think Villanova has a future that it needs to think about, and getting minutes to players that saw a secondary role could be big. And racking up some wins in the NIT could be big for this team next year. But Cam Whitmore and Justin Moore aren't going to sacrifice their own futures to play in this game.
Yeah, and they might play. You know, as we record this on Monday night, we're unsure. Kyle Neptune said they're going to be game time decisions. From everything we're hearing, it sounds like they are leaning towards being held out. And again, I don't think it's fair to be angry at these guys. You can be disappointed.
Right.
Absolutely. I think that's totally fair. But Cam Whitmore is going to be a lottery pick in 3 months or 4 months. So I totally get that. And Justin Moore has a very real possibility of making the jump to professional basketball, wherever that may be. And of course, is coming back from the injury here. So I get it as much as it comes down to it. You know, you mentioned, you know, the potential for Villanova to win games and this and try and put this together. And so that brings me to a question that I'm interested in what you think. We know that this has been a disappointing season in many aspects. How much can this NIT tournament change your perception of the season? Say, if they go out here and Liberty just shoots the lights out and annihilates them on Tuesday, will that only further your disappointment in the season? And then on the flip side, say Villanova goes on some sort of a run and they make it to a Final Four in Las Vegas. Will that make you think a lot more kindly, or is there no change at all?
Because it's no, it's an interesting question. It's a really interesting question. And I think my perception, I've been mentioning this to you all day on Monday, of the NIT has changed, because I was pretty excited watching the bracket and the selection field. Sunday. Right. It's a decent field. Obviously, you get the four big teams that were snubbed out of the NCAA tournament, them being the one seeds. It just feels like the way the dominoes have fallen, the hype is getting smaller and smaller. And maybe that's on me for having higher expectations. To be frank, if Villanova gets crushed by Liberty, I don't really think anything of it. If Villanova wins the NIT tournament, I will be excited. I think like the normal average Villanova fan, but I don't think it takes away from the way this team played during the regular season. And I realize that that's kind of a contradictory statement. You can't be excited when they win, but not care when they lose. But I don't know. I think that this is a different group, especially if Whitmore and Moore don't play, obviously. This is a much different group. And there will be so many questions that we'll never know the answer to about what this team could have looked like fully healthy all year long, because we obviously saw glimpses towards the end of the season where they put it all together and looked like a team that could compete late in March in postseason play. We'll never be able to know what the answer to that question is. We're probably going to have to ask those questions again come NIT play when Moore and Whitmore sit out.
If
they set out, exactly. And I'm just taking the two entities separately. Where are you at there?
Fair enough. A loss won't do much to change my perception on the season, because it's been a rough year. And I've talked about it many times of all the deficiencies that we've seen here. A win or a couple wins also won't drastically impact how I feel about the season, but it can help establish some building blocks going forward. And I think the way that they win will also, or if they win, the way that they would win those games would be important. You know, do we see extended run for a guy like Brendan Hawson? It's something we haven't seen for a while now. Does Mark Armstrong get a little bit more of the key to the offense here in the NIT, especially if Justin Moore's out? Do we see some sort of flash from Trey Patterson to make us believe that he can tap into the talent that I think a lot of us have believed he has in there since he first stepped onto this campus? So with the potential of guys like Whitmore and Moore maybe sitting out, it does lead to an opportunity for more minutes for some of the younger guys. And even if they do play, I'd still like to see some of the younger guys play more, because in the grand scheme of things, give these kids an opportunity to play in an elimination game, a postseason game, and let's see what they got here. Because as much as I would love for Villanova to go on an NIT run, you know, if they drop the game and they get eliminated, it is what it is in the end.
Yeah, there's nothing greater to look forward to. No, to be honest with you, I don't think there's any reason to not see all the things that you mentioned when it comes to the young guys. There's a reason why Villanova accepted its NIT bid and a team like UNC did not. UNC was the number one ranked preseason team coming off of a national championship appearance, and they didn't even make the NCAA tournament. Their egos are hurt.
They shouldn't have been close, by the way. I was annoyed they were in the first four out. They should not have been
in the
first
four out.
No,
they weren't close. Rutgers was way better than
Rutgers should be in the tournament.
Yeah.
Sorry, Providence.
But there's no reason why Villanova shouldn't be playing. And we have some questions in the mailbag, and we'll be spending a lot of time talking about this on our season recap episode about what the future looks like for Villanova. I understand that people would like to see Villanova go on a run, as would everyone. I would love, the biggest thing for me is just not ending on that Creighton loss. That would really suck. That was just not what this team was like all season long, or at least for the last few months of the season. So I would love to see them win just to get that sour taste out of my mouth. But like you said, there is a lot to watch and be excited about if Neptune coaches it in that way.
So all that said, I'm really excited for this game on Tuesday night. I am pumped to watch Villanova play some postseason basketball. As I said, it might be dancing in the dark, being that it's the NIT, but it's
ESPNU, baby.
Yeah, I saw it. It's not ESPN Plus. But it's an opportunity for them to go out there, play some postseason games. That's very important for Kyle Neptune, by the way, too, for us to continue the evaluation of him and see how he coaches in these elimination postseason tournament style games. So as disappointing as we can say everything is, and it totally has been, once we get to 9:30, whenever it is on Tuesday night, I'm going to be locked in and I'm ready for this game.
I feel the same way, and I think they'll take it very seriously, regardless of if the Stars play. I think the rest of the team will take this game seriously and really want to go out and win.
Oh, as do I. If they're playing, and
they might as well win.
They're going out there for it. So let's do it, and we'll see if we have a second game to cover later this week.
Yeah, so speaking of second games and futures in March.
Oh, yeah.
Like we mentioned at the beginning, the Villanova women's basketball team is what you should have your eyes on all month long. They drew the 4 seed in the women's tournament. Pat, take it away. I know you have some amazing stats that you're probably just jumping out of your seat to get at.
Yeah, I wish I had more fun stats, but I do have a couple to go off of. First, they're in the Greenville 2 region, where they did draw Cleveland State as the 13 seed there, and of course, Villanova being a 4. This is their first consecutive NCAA tournament appearance in 20 years. It is the second highest NCAA tournament seeding for them in program history, second to when they were a number 2 seed and an Elite 8 team. And I think most importantly for a lot of us in Nova Nation, they are hosting a first round game and the potential to host a second round game as well as a home team if they are able to get past Cleveland State here. That's incredibly exciting. It's on Saturday at 5:00 is that first round game. And I mean, what more can you ask for in that? I know it was a rough way to end the season or end the Big East tournament going in there against UConn. They did battle back in that game and make things close before UConn pulled away. Maddie Segrest, ESPN's breakout player of the tournament, wink, wink, I'll leave it
emphasize
there.
The disgust in your voice.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to leave it there. You know, averaging basically 29 points a game to go with her 9 rebounds, the highest, of course, greatest all-time scorer in Villanova history. Lucy Olson has had a wonderful season for the Wildcats. I have a blast watching her play. She runs the offense so well from the point guard position and makes a lot of things happen for them. Maddie Burke can really burn teams from 3. This team is fun. If you have not watched them, I know we've both called for it this season. Please do on Saturday. If you can find a way to the pavilion, go to it. They are a really good team. They finished the season 28-6, number 10 in the final AP poll. They are very talented and they have a chance to go on a run here. So let's all get behind them and let's do it.
Yeah, I'm so excited. 5:00 is a really good slot at the Finn on Saturday night too. They have 3 conference losses. And they have 1 conference loss to a team not named UConn. So I understand that they have to prove that they can beat the national teams, the non-conference teams out there that are really going to compete. We know the names every year because there are these stalwarts in women's basketball that you just can't avoid. But I mentioned Shaka Smart and Sean Miller's impact on the men's Big East conference. Mm-hmm. You have to put Denise Dillon in the same sentence. The way that she has brought Villanova onto a national scale in her 3 seasons, consecutive tournament appearances, like you mentioned, it's pretty astounding the way her and Segrest together have brought Villanova back on the national landscape map. They're in a tough region with Indiana. Of course, I told Pat earlier, I saw Indiana and I was psyched that it wasn't Stanford or South Carolina or UConn, but then I go and do some research and realize that Indiana's been absolutely absurd this season.
They
so
light it up on the scoreboard.
It's a tough draw no matter what, to be honest with you, but to be able to host is so exciting. I saw a cool quote from Dillon about how different Selection Sunday was this year for them, because last year they were just hoping to get in, and this year they were able to soak it in because they knew that they had already earned it. And that has got to be one of the best feelings in the entire world. And I'll just cap it off with some Maddie Segrest talk here.
Do it.
If you're not in it enough to realize that Maddie Segrest has already broken out as one of the best women's college basketball players over the last 3 seasons, then you are sorely mistaken. And I feel badly that you have missed so much greatness, because she is by far one of the best players in women's college basketball. Women's college basketball history, I think you could even go as far because of her scoring outbursts. Villanova basketball history, for sure. And just on the national scale, I think she's going to blow up, not break out.
Absolutely. I like blow up rather than breakout, because breakout is just an insult to everything that exactly. She has done over the last couple of years. Just looking at it, Cleveland State is 30-4, and they did win the Horizon League tournament title. You look at Villanova from a year ago, just to think of how far these Cats have come. They were an 11 seed, plucky little upset where they did beat BYU to advance into the second round of the tournament. This year, there is most certainly a path for them to get to the Sweet 16 and potentially beyond. We mentioned Cleveland State. That if they are able to get past Cleveland State, they have a matchup looming against either Washington State or Florida Gulf Coast. Florida Gulf Coast as a 12 scores a ton of points, and Washington State, just from a bit of research I was doing, look like a little one of the weaker five seeds that can be drawn there. Of course, the game would be at the Finneran Pavilion as well, so there's absolutely an opportunity for Denise Dillon's squad to get into the Sweet 16, and we know it's basically a new tournament once you get down to those mm-hmm. final 16 teams. And if you're there, you got a chance to get to that final four. So really, really excited to see everything kick off this weekend.
Yeah. I hope they sell out the Finn again. I know you're going to make every effort to be there, but
that's the plan. The plan is to be there on Saturday afternoon. So that's
having the fan aspect, especially watching it on TV, like those UConn games were at the end of the season. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So we will definitely be tuning in and hoping that the Lady Cats can pull it out. As Pat mentioned on Twitter today, we are moving up our mailbag to tonight's episode because we wanted to make sure we got some fun questions in before Villanova's NIT matchup against Liberty on Tuesday night. So should we get into these, Pat?
Let's do it. Yeah, because focus will be on the game on our Thursday episode, and maybe a preview too. We shall see.
Would love that.
So we'll get our questions in now. Matt Berger did ask a question about Moore and Cam. We kind of answered that already. I have a feeling they will not play, but we shall see. And I think you were leaning the same way.
Agreed.
All right, then we got two questions that come in from Nick. First one, since the reformation of the Big East, it seems like the conference as a whole, Nova excluded, has generally underperformed in the tournament. Is this the year that Big East teams will finally go on a run?
No, it's an astute observation, and I think it's been one of the downfalls of national perception of the Big East. I think you and I have both been pretty clear that we've thought the Big East was the second strongest league in the country this year behind the Big 12. I think the reason why it hasn't been like that in the past, we thought it was going to be last year, is because there have been early exits from teams. You would think that the way Marquette, Xavier, UConn, maybe throw Creighton in that mix too as a sixth seed are looking this year, that there could be some serious runs. I said literally everybody I know has picked Marquette in the final four above Purdue. I think a lot of people like Xavier. They're actually playing Kennesaw State 3-14, the team that Liberty lost to win the A-Sun to get into the tournament. So that was a cool little twist there. But I think UConn beating Iona would be huge. I think all three teams, as trendy as they might be, I really do think that they have a chance to reverse the Big East narrative this year and get some true quality wins.
So I've got two ways of looking at this. And the first way is cheating, because it's mentioned, you know, since the reformation of the conference. I'm going to go past that. But just remember that 5 of the last 12 national champions have come from the Big East, and there is no conference that can come close to that. So your 5 national champions, and yes, I'm further cheating by counting one of these in here, but of course, Villanova has 2, Connecticut has 2, and Louisville has 1 during the final year of the old Big East while they were still in it. Now, yes, that has been vacated, but I'm still going to count it for the purposes of
a lot of cheating in
question.
There, Pat, man.
Patino would be proud. looking at the other conferences over those last 12 years, the ACC has 3. The Big 12 has 2, SEC has 1, and COVID has 1 in 2020. So
no, when you put it like that, that's a really good perspective.
So just think about that for the conference as a whole. And then let's look. I looked back over the last couple years and said, you know, what's happened for these Big East teams in the NCAA tournament? Of course, just a year ago, Villanova goes to a Final Four. UConn was a 5 seed. Providence made it to the Sweet 16. In 2021, you had Creighton and Villanova were Sweet 16 teams. 2019, Marquette was a 5 seed before losing to John Morant. 2018, Xavier was a one seed that got bounced early. Villanova, of course, goes on to win a national championship. 2017, Xavier was an Elite Eight team. Butler was a Sweet 16 team. Villanova was a one seed. And 2016, Villanova won a title. Now, there's a lot of Villanova in that, as I know you mentioned, but you know, you hear Butler, you hear Xavier, you hear Providence, you hear UConn, you hear Marquette. I know UConn hasn't won the games recently, but they put together seeding. This conference still comparatively does very well. You have to remember there's only 10 or 11 teams, depending on how far back you want to go. In this conference, it is not like the Big Ten that can get nine guys in there because they have like 16 teams in their conference. It's a bit of a different dynamic. So I think the Big East deserves a little bit more credit than it was originally given.
You nailed it. Love that. Well said.
Thank you. Second question from Nick. Are we witnessing the beginning of a Marquette reign of terror in the conference? And as a history nerd, I love the reference to the French Revolution.
Interesting. I didn't see this one before we started recording. I like it. I think it's hard to doubt Shaka Smart. I wonder how they're going to do when they actually have the right perception around them. I think they love the chip on the shoulder mentality this year. And I think they will probably go into next year. Is Tyler Kolek graduating? I'm not even sure, actually.
Oh, no. Kolek's got multiple years left.
Yeah, so they're going to be running back a very similar team.
It's going to be basically the same team, you would assume.
Yeah, Marquette is not an old team by any stretch. So they will probably come into the preseason rankings as the favorite. But there's going to be a lot of opponents there with a target on their back. So I wouldn't go as far as to say a reign of terror, but I think Marquette is always going to be a tough out with Shaka.
Yeah, I can't say reign of terror just because of the sheer coaching talent that is up and down this conference. You know, you look at your Hurleys, your Cooleys, your Millers, your McDermotts. You know, you hope Neptune can develop into one. And who knows who St. John's and Georgetown are going to bring in here to go along with Shaka. I think Marquette is going to be very good for a while, and they are establishing their identity and their DNA that's going to make them very tough. But there's too much talent in this conference for me to think they are just going to run away with it for the foreseeable future.
I totally agree.
And then we just have a bunch of questions coming in from Jared. So we're going to hit them as they go. Assuming Moore and Cam don't play, give me your projected starting lineup for Tuesday night.
I think it's going to be similar to what we saw in early November. Like we had, I do think Armstrong starts over Chris Arch. So I would love to see Armstrong, Daniels, Longino, Slater, Dixon. Arch coming off the bench.
That's also the lineup that I am hoping for.
Yeah.
I do think you're going to see Chris Arch start if Justin Moore is not there because of the loss of a Moore to have that steadier hand at the point guard position. And I think that is Neptune's look at it. That is not my look at it.
Yeah.
Because as we know, I want Mark Armstrong in there and I want him playing a ton of minutes. But I have a feeling that's how it goes. So I will substitute Arch in for Armstrong and then otherwise have the same lineup as you.
Yeah. Interesting. It's a throwback.
Yeah, it is. And I don't think it's one that we really wanted to throw back to. How much emphasis should we be putting on playing the young guys versus bidding farewell to the guys not returning next year in the NIT?
Yeah, I think what you said was correct. We've been talking about it for a little while now. There's a reason why this Villanova team is still playing because they have a lot of returners for last year. I don't think bidding farewell will factor into it as much. For Slater and Daniels, I think it's the fact that it might be their last game. It's less about the environment that it'll be. I'm sure they didn't envision at Liberty to be one of their last games of their collegiate career, which is definitely a bummer. But I agree with you in that I really hope we can have some serious Armstrong, Patterson, Hausen takeaways from Villanova's NIT run.
Yeah, give me the young guys, but it's not at the extent where, Brandon Slater and Caleb Daniels get to play 10 minutes and
Brandon Hausen for 35.
No, yeah. I those guys should be able to have an opportunity to go out there and represent the school, you know, one last time and do it proudly there. I just still want the younger guys to be able to have an opportunity.
Yep, definitely.
I'm going to flip-flop the question so we end on one of them, but going into next year, do you think Kyle will start to or try to implement more parts of his style, such as potentially running more set plays, or does he stick with the Jay Wright style offense to kind of keep that consistency going?
Yeah, I think you and I have been preaching set plays for a while now. If you're listening to this podcast, you probably feel the same way. I think there's going to be a different game plan next year because you're losing the type of playmaking in Moore and Whitmore if they decide to leave Villanova. So you're not going to have the type of ball handlers and shot creators that you had this year versus last year even. So it's going to be different. I think Neptune is going to have the brunt of the pressure to work this game plan. Hopefully he makes it his own roster and he's able to run sets that he feels like fits his personnel well, as opposed to what's worked in the past.
So who is Kyle Neptune is a question that we're all still trying to work out here, because it's really difficult. You know, there's only 1 year of sample size to go off of at Fordham. And then at Villanova this year, a lot of it felt like it had to just try and stay as consistent as everything Jay had done and was preaching because of the transition and keeping these guys in there. I'm curious, as we move into year two, do we see a little bit more of the Fordham Neptune, where it was easier to try and institute his style and things that he wanted, of course, than trying to follow Jay right here? So what's one thing that I look at? One big thing, Fordham played a heck of a lot faster than Villanova did this year. And his 1 year at Fordham, they were 139th in the country in tempo. Not track runners, by the way, but compared to Villanova, they were 336th this season. That's almost a 200 school difference there in tempo. I'm curious to see if we see that with an uptick next year. Also, look at the three-pointers. Fordham still took a ton of threes. You know, they averaged about, or they had 43% of their shot attempts under Neptune were from deep, but it was 48% here with Villanova. Do we see that come down a little bit closer to that 43 and look for a little bit more of a balanced approach here? It's things like that that I'm going to be looking out for in year two of the Neptune era, for if he is going to try and work on establishing more of his own identity, or if we're going to continue to stick along the, this is what Jay did, so we're going to stay at it.
Yeah, the tempo point especially, there's absolutely no reason why he shouldn't be using the athleticism on this roster to his advantage. And I think you hit all the nails on the head. I think we're going to see a lot more of Neptune's fingerprints on the team next year in terms of literally recruiting the players that he wants. Again, this is not his full team that he came into this year. So I agree with you that I think he's going to have a lot more control. Not that he didn't. You know, Jay Wright has been very vocal that he has not been in the shadows at any point. But I think we're going to see Kyle Neptune full throttle next year for sure.
And let's wrap up with this one, because I had to save this one for last. Talk me off the ledge about next year and the future of the program.
You're implying that a lot of us are on the ledge. I love it. You take this one first. Me off the ledge, Pat.
So I think a lot of people are on the ledge if you follow the Twitter conversations that pop up. I would tell you that for next year, there are building blocks in place. You have a coach that has now had year one under his belt here at Villanova, and that is no small feat, especially with the amount of bumps that he had to go through. You have some foundational players that you're going to carry forward. Eric Dixon is expected to be back as that safety valve and one of the best players in the conference. You have young players like Mark Armstrong and Jordan Longino and Brendan Hawson that you feel can continue to take a step forward there. You have Jordan Dumont coming in that very much feels like it fits the DNA of Villanova, in a player that is not a five-star, is not super highly valued across the country, but was identified as the staff as a player that can come in here and fit what Villanova wants to do, is that, and they can continue to mold him into a true Villanova player. I believe you're going to see Villanova hit this transfer portal hard and hit it very fast. They're going to have to bring in multiple guys, because there is a chance that four or five guys are outgoing, whether it be through graduation, moving on to the next level, or transfer. There is no choice here, and Villanova is going to do it. They are still in transition. Next year is still going to be part of a transition, but your entire foundation gets shook when your Hall of Fame coach that's been here for 20 years leaves. It's very, very difficult to do what, say, Duke did this year, where Shire takes over. They're a five seed and are a trendy pick to go to the Final Four. Villanova and Duke are very different in those ways, and that's okay here. It still may not be what you want it to be next year in terms of Villanova returning to, say, a top three seed in the NCAA tournament, but they are working on embarking on the next phase of Villanova basketball, and I think they have some of the pieces in place and are going to gain more of those pieces to be able to do it.
Yes, I love all those points. I think John Shire and Hubert Davis both set unrealistic standards for first-year head coaches.
Yeah, you saw it with Davis. Programs. What happened this year?
I don't mean this at all to mean that this year was a waste or anything like that. I think I am very clear about that point, that I do not believe that is true. But there's something to be said for getting the first year out of the way. And a lot happened this year. Mm-hmm. Again, a full year of Whitmore and more healthy. This is a different program. You obviously lose Jay Wright. You also lose the Big East player of the year in Colin Gillespie and Jermaine Samuels, whose impact wasn't fully felt until he was gone from the program. I am so excited to see what year two looks like from Neptune, how he's able to impact this team, what he's able to do with his roster, his recruits. And I'm also just excited to see how the transfer portal works full
Very
throttle.
Much so.
Because we haven't seen anything like that in really what I can remember as a Villanova fan. It's been one player here or there every few years. Like you said, this has the chance to be three or four players, which is pretty awesome given that at least a few hours ago, as we're recording on Monday night, a record 173 players hit the portal today. So it is becoming trendy, Pat, to transfer. And I hope that Villanova takes advantage and is able to mix things up, maybe try and look a little bit different next year as opposed to the years in the past, because this is now a different team under Kyle Neptune, and that's okay.
Last thing to address, especially on the 2023 recruiting class, it's okay to be upset and disappointed that Dumont is the only one coming in. That was a miss by the staff this year, but you have to understand how difficult it is to reel these guys in this late in the recruiting process for these 2023 guys when your Hall of Fame head coach retires in the spring of these guys going from their junior to their senior year. So I get that. For 2024, though, Villanova is in on a ton of guys, and I expect to see things start to go back to normal with the 24 class. Now they're going to have to make up for that with some transfers to be able to supplement that roster for next year. But if we're really looking into the future of the program, expect recruiting to take a tick back up over the next year or so.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I think the standards will still be the same, and that Villanova is a system, and they are looking for very specific players that are going to fit that system. Be a cog in the machine, as it's always been. But I'm just excited to get into this transfer portal, because it feels like we've been on the fringe for so long with just those one-off players. And I think it can be really fun to jump in on this.
There was obviously monumental change to the program last year. There's going to be more change coming this year, whether it be coaching staff, transfers out, guys going, it's going to happen. And so we're going into an offseason that is unbelievably important for the program. And we'll see where it goes. But I'm certainly not in panic mode.
No, that's actually, I was going to say something like that. I think it's disappointing to see all these recruits that Villanova is linked to accept other teams. But panic bells are not going off
not
in
yet.
My head as well.
Not
and
yet.
I'll leave you with this.
Disappointed, but not
I'll leave
yet.
You with this. I think Eric Dixon has a chance to be the preseason Big East Player of the Year.
Love it.
How
Kyle Kolick's probably got something to say about that. But Dixon should be in the conversation.
Absolutely in the conversation. So we're going to have so much more recap. I loved those questions tonight. So thank you for everybody who submitted those. But we're going to have a ton of future looking questions. For now, we got to buckle up for this Liberty game, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, enough about the future. We got a game tonight as everyone listens to this. So pumped to see the guys out there in Virginia. And let's see if they can come away with a win.
I hope so.
All right, that'll do it for us here on the State of the Nova Nation podcast, presented by VU Hoops. Be sure to check out VUHoops.com for all your Villanova content all season long. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow it on Spotify, and follow us on Twitter at SONNPod. We are less than 20 followers away from 1,000. Come on. I know you're listening. I know you're not following. You know you want to do it. Let's get us there to 1,000. We will be back at it on Wednesday. Everyone roots on the Cats on Tuesday night. We'll see if they can start some NIT magic. And Nova Nation,